All right, turn a couple of pages, page 15, and it's page 13 in the first edition. It's chapter 2, section 6, paragraph 6. All right, what I'm about to read is a line that I read fairly often, or probably not fairly often anymore, every once in a while, as a wonderful example, among many others in the material, of how Jesus succinctly summarizes what the whole process is about. And here he does it again in the context of psychotherapy, but you could just as easily apply it to any relationship or situation you're in, business, personal relationship, any other kind of professional relationship, anything. And he begins by actually going back to paragraph 5. He says, this realization, and the realization is that only forgiveness heals an unforgiveness, and only an unforgiveness can possibly give rise to sickness of any kind. That's the end of paragraph 5. This realization is the final goal of psychotherapy. How is it reached? Okay, here it is. All right, now, this is very similar to what he does in chapter 27 in the text in The Dreamer of the Dream. The first paragraph is all about suffering. Paragraph 2 says, here's how you end all suffering. Not some suffering, all suffering. And he says, you see the problem as it is and not the way you have set it up. All right, he's going to do the same thing here. Here, how is that final goal reached? How is forgiveness attained? Here it is. The therapist sees in the patient all that he has not forgiven in himself, and is thus given another chance to look at it and open it to reevaluation and forgive it. Nothing is said about the patient. Nothing is said about the dynamics of the patient, about the past history of the patient, about the technique of psychotherapy. Totally irrelevant. But apply that same idea to everything. Right? Decisions that are made in business, for example, that seem to be based on brilliance and past experience and wisdom and all that, are totally irrelevant to what really goes on. And this goes for everything. Right? If what has to be healed is the patient's forgetting to laugh at the tiny mad idea, the patient's taking seriously his or her problem, if that's the problem, then the solution is to remind your patient that the block has had no effect. And the gentle smile that has nothing to do with what goes on in your mouth. Right? It's an attitude of peace and of love and of kindness and of gentleness. That attitude, that gentle smile, says to the person, nothing happened. Once you understand that that's the problem, and that's the solution, then my task as a therapist is to be able to be in touch with the solution, to look at the blockage in me that I believe has interfered with the flow of love. So as I'm sitting in my office with you and I don't know what to say and I get anxious and I get guilty and I get this and I get all the kinds of things that therapists get into, all of it is because I forgot that I'm not the therapist. And I forget all I have to do is hear the underlying melos and let the song, let the symphony unfold. I don't have to do anything else. I don't have to make it happen. You know, but I told the story at the beginning this morning about the experience I had after hearing Beethoven's quartet, and I tried to make it happen with my patient the following morning. And I did not know how to do it. And I knew there was something that I wanted to do. I wanted to integrate that experience with what I was doing professionally, and I did not know how to do it because I thought I had to do it. Right. So all I have to do now is realize the problem is my block, not your block. However, I don't know I have a block because I'm the almighty therapist. Years of training and experience, and I charge $175 for 47 minutes or 42 minutes or whatever, and I think I know everything. So what I have to understand is that whatever it is I see in you is a projection of what I don't want to recognize and accept in myself. The therapist sees in the patient all that he has not forgiven in himself, all of the guilt, all of the belief in sin, all of the judgments that we make about ourselves. That's what we don't see. And whenever you don't see it, you deny it or repress it, and whenever you repress, you would automatically project. So the value of my practice of psychotherapy is that it will heal me if I have eyes to see and ears to listen with. Which means I let my therapist show me that whatever it is I am making real and taking seriously in you is a projection of what I have not forgiven in myself. And now that I'm aware of that, it's open now to reevaluation. I can now look at it. So at the same time that I'm helping you get past your block by not giving it a power it doesn't have, I'm doing the very same thing for myself. That's the core of psychotherapy. That's the core of forgiveness. That's what shifts a special relationship to a holy relationship. Nothing is said about what the therapist does with the patient. Nothing is said about what you do to your special love or hate partner. Right? There's that wonderful line in The Unhealed Healer that I read from briefly before in Chapter 9 in the text, which was taken down in the 60s when psychotherapists were all hot and bothered about trying to figure out what went on in psychotherapy and trying to measure it and understand it and objectify it, and then to do studies on whether psychotherapy was effective or not. There was a whole spate of research that went on in the 60s and the 70s. Right? And in The Unhealed Healer, Jesus says, this is why nobody could ever figure out what goes on in psychotherapy, because nothing ever does. Nothing ever goes on in a relationship, because there is no relationship. And this explains why. Sure, as a therapist, I have to say something, and I have to intervene, I have to interject, I have to be helpful. But that's afterwards. That's the effect. That will automatically come. If I get myself out of the way as a conductor, Mozart's music will just flow. I don't have to do anything. I just let it flow. And wherever I feel there's an impediment in the orchestra, I heal it. And I just let the music flow. Well, that's what I do as a therapist. I let the music, I let the melos flow. It's not that I don't say anything. But I'm not the one who says it. The therapist lets healing be. My job is to be aware of the projections I put on you, just as Jesus is saying here. And the projection I put on you is what I don't want to accept in myself. I've made the blockage. I've made my ego decision, my ego thought system, real and so powerful and destructive that I can never look at it again because the guilt is so enormous. Because I've made it real, I've taken it seriously. I remembered not to laugh. So all I have to do is look at it now with Jesus next to me, and I laugh at it. It's not a derisive laugh, it's not a dismissive laugh, it's not a denial laugh. It's a laugh that says how silly to think this could have had an effect on God. How silly to believe this could have had an effect on me as a child of God. That's all I do. And that's what happens in a therapeutic relationship. That's what happens in any relationship. The relationship becomes a screen onto which you project your own unconscious guilt. Right? When this occurs, when the therapist is able to do this, open it to reevaluation, right, and then let it go. When this occurs, he sees his sins as gone into a past that is no longer here. Remember what Jesus says at the beginning of chapter 28. This world was over long ago. The thoughts that made it are gone. The thoughts of sin are gone. They're gone because they never even happened. I don't have to analyze the sin. I don't have to analyze the neurosis. I don't have to analyze anything. I just look at it and realize this has no effect. I begin to open up my ears and hear that underlying melody. And as a conductor, then that melody would flow through my hands and baton, and that's how the music would sound. And then my hand, my baton, becomes one with the composer, one with the orchestra, and the music is exactly the way it was conceived. It is recreated. That's how Furtwängler termed it. But that's what we do. We recreate that original experience of love that we sought to leave. and then felt so guilty about it. But we never left. Nothing changed. That's what we have to learn, and therefore that's what we teach. And that's what heals. Again, that's what he's saying here. Until he does this, he must think of evil as besetting him here and now. Until I can open up my own guilt to reevaluation and forgive it, I must believe it's there. Right? The patient is his screen for the projection of his sins, enabling him to let them go. Let him retain one spot of sin in what he looks upon, and his release is partial and will not be sure. Right? As long as I hold on to my guilt, my patient, my workers, the people I work with, the office, the people I live with, everybody around me, right? Important relationships, minimal relationships. All of these become the screen for the projection of my sins. But now this is the opportunity for me to let them go. Again, this would allow you every single day to wake and bound up from your bed in joy, because this will be a day in which you could learn still further that you were wrong. This is a day that will take you further along your journey. This is a happy day, even if on the level of the world is awful. Because if you could begin to learn that nothing external can take away your peace, and even if you don't specifically experience it, you will know that's the lesson. You will get more and more in touch with your resistance. That's all very, very helpful information. Right? And wonderful information, because it will speed you along. And so you go through your day at home and at work, and you pay attention to when your buttons are pushed, when you get angry, when you get despondent, when you get despairing, when you get anxious, when you get excited. And you realize that all of this is a projection of my sins. I am using the person, I'm using the situation as a screen for the projection of my sins. But if I look at this as a classroom and I have Jesus with me as my teacher, I can let it go. And I become more and more sensitive to when I'm choosing my ego. And even when I do, I could say, well, I obviously became too afraid of love. And I'm stupid enough and insane enough to pay this very heavy price. It doesn't make me a bad person. It just makes me silly. Because I'm doing something which will hurt me. This will unify your day, because now all the separate parts, the seemingly disparate segments of your experience at home and at work, will now be unified. Just like the different parts of a symphony, when you understand the underlying melos, are now pulled all together as a unified whole. So the unified whole, the underlying melos of your day, is the right-minded view that everything now is a classroom for you. So you'll see your day as a symphony, as a movement in a larger symphony called your life. And as much as you can, you want to get yourself out of the way so the music flows. And then you're aware when it doesn't flow, when you feel a glitch in your stomach, when you feel some anxiety, when you feel some anger, when you feel some joyous expectation of something, any aspect of specialness. And you realize this is not the symphony. This is not the melos. This is something I'm imposing on the music. I'm trying to change it. I'm not letting the music flow freely. I'm trying to impose my own ego on it, my own wishes on it. And then you just watch that happen. And you watch the symphony of your life unfold. But it will give your life a meaning, it will give your life a purpose, and it will give everything a unified thought that makes it all one, no matter what happens. All right, that's another way of understanding what Jesus means at the end of chapter 15, when he says, make this year different by making it all the same. Make this day different by making it all the same. Make your life different by making it all the same. See everything through the eyes of that unified gestalt, of that whole. And here the underlying melos, which is the detour your ego has led you on away from God, that now gets turned around and becomes the means of having you return. Whether you have a good day or a bad day, by the world's standards or your standards, is irrelevant now. Every day is a good day if you learn from it. Remember, what we've judged as our greatest advances were our greatest retreats. We don't know. and we don't have to know. All we have to listen to is the conductor that unifies it all.